for watching this Google Plus Hangout. This is Nick Scherfield of HoustonTexans.com, and I'm joined on the other end by Jeff Hobson of Bengals.com, and we're here for an AFC wildcard playoff game hangout. And the Texans, of course, 12-4, AFC South champs, are hosting the wildcard participant Cincinnati Bengals, who went 10-6 this season in the AFC North. The game's at Reliance Stadium on Saturday, 3:30 p.m. Central kickoff, a rematch of last year's playoff game at Reliance Stadium. Jeff, thanks for joining me today. How you doing?
Nick, thanks very much for the invite. It's good to see you in one spot. You've been all over the place.
What we're going to do with this hangout is, you and I both cover these teams. We're around the teams every day, all the practices, all the games, and we're just going to go through five different points about the teams as we head into this playoff matchup here at Reliance Stadium. And starting with number one, we're going to look at where both of these teams are heading into the playoffs. And, I'll start for the Texans. Of course, they started the season 11-1. They were looking like a lock to get at least a bye in the AFC and very likely the number one seed overall in the AFC. Then they lost three of their last four games, lost two games in a row for the first time all year at the very end of the season, losses in Minnesota at home, Indianapolis on the road. And with that loss to Indianapolis, they went from the number one seed in the AFC to now the number three seed, where they are playing on wild card weekend 6 days later against the Bengals. And obviously a lot of consternation among the fan base and among people watching this team, speculating the Texans will be one and done, or if they win, they're not going to beat the Patriots next week in New England. But this is a Texans team that showed over the first 12 games of the year that they were one of the most complete balanced teams in the NFL. They were top five in the league in scoring, offense and defense, the only team in the league to have that distinction through 12 games. They're top 10 across the board on offense and in passing and rushing and yards in scoring. And that's something they're looking to obviously get back to. They know one game, one play can turn everything around. They look at that pick six, for example, that J.J. Watt had last year against the Bengals in this game, really turned around that game. And they know if they get rolling with this game, then they'll have another chance to win next week, another chance the week after that. But a very disappointing end of the season here for the Texans, the regular season. But as head coach Gary Kubiak said, that was the end of that season. Now it's a new season. Everyone's starting with a clean slate, 0-0 as they go into the playoffs.
Yeah, the Bengals kind of just had the opposite. They had the best, they had the best finish ever under Marvin Lewis in his 10 seasons. They went 7-1. In fact, it's the best finish that they've had in franchise history, only next to the 1981 AFC champs that did the same thing, that won seven of their last eight. Really, it all began, Nick, after the they were 3-5 after losing to Denver, and they went on this run that was basically been built around their defense. The last eight games, they've given up 12 points per game. Their front four has emerged as one of, people are calling it the best front four in the game now, and it was kind of ironic this all started with the Giants. I think the boys, the guys wanted to show their stuff against, against those guys and the best front four in the game, and it began from there where they're giving up 12 points per game. They've only allowed, 300 yards twice. They're getting fine play out of their rookie Will Backer, Vontaze Burfict, who had 23 tackles last week. They get stabilized by Chris Crocker at safety, who did not, who was not with the team, was not with anybody until the third week of September. When he came in, that kind of solidified everything. They had a real it was a surprise. They had a real choppy start to the season on defense. They thought they were going to be really good coming out with that front four, but they were banged up. Right end Michael Johnson was the only lineman who was really healthy. And once they got going, they got Crocker back, they got people healthy. Ray Maluga, the middle backer, dropped about 17 pounds from September until the bye week. That really helped him in coverage and also helped him against the run. They've been getting terrific play from their corners. They've got a new starter there in Terrence Newman, who came over from the Cowboys. Who's really revived his career under Mike Zimmer, who's the guy that drafted him in Dallas. Leon Hall, who the Texans didn't see last year. Really, if it hadn't been the year of Manning and Adrian Peterson, he'd be getting some play for comeback player of the year. He blew out his Achilles last November. Guy's been terrific. Two huge interceptions in December to help turn games. Adam Jones, the last time we saw Adam Jones, or the Texans saw Adam Jones, Andre Johnson was running past them on a huge 40-yard touchdown play that broke open that game last year. He's been a different guy this year. He's been the third corner. with Hall and Newman being the starters, and he's really, you know, I know some websites, Pro Football Focus has him ranked as like the seventh best cover corner in the league. So the thing is, it's offense. The offense has dipped the month of December. They've only scored like six touchdowns. It's kind of they're a mirror of the Texans almost, the way they've struggled this last month. They're trying to get they're working on their fourth different starting wide receiver, which is Marvin Jones, a rookie. The running game has been gummed up a little bit. They haven't been running the ball as effectively as they did in a four-game winning streak. So while I think the Bengals are very different from the Texans in the fact that they're really on a run and playing with a lot of momentum, offensively I think there are a lot of similarities in their two offenses trying to find their rhythm. So it really should be interesting. The Bengals are hoping this is a wild card reshuffle. They don't want anything like what happened down there where they just get bowled over, I think, by the not only by the atmosphere but by J.J. Watt. So I think they feel like they're a little bit more grounded this trip.
Well, a lot of what you just said leads into point number two that we're going to talk about here right now, which is how these two teams are different from last year. And, you know, it was ironic they're ending up playing each other again. It's the same day on a Saturday, the same time, kickoff 3:30 at Reliance Stadium. The teams are the same seed this year as they were last year, and in wild card rematches that have happened in recent seasons, it's actually always ended up that the team that has won the first matchup has won the second one. But like you said, the Bengals are hoping for a different outcome this time around. But what I want to talk about the second point is how these two teams are different from last year. You mentioned a lot of it. I'll let you start this one off. It seems like from what you're talking about, a lot of the differences in this Bengals team from last year's playoff game are on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, they're completely different there. I mean, they've got some same faces, but they're much, you know, but they're much healthier. They got Mal Lugers back in the middle, but he was playing hurt on a bad ankle. They didn't have Pat Sims last year, who was really he only plays about maybe 36% of the snaps, but he's really a great probably their best run stop, you know, and they didn't have him. Chris Crocker was playing hurt last year. He was basically playing on one knee. Foster just you know, obviously ripped them up, and that came a week after Ray Rice ripped them up. Well, they just haven't been getting up the run like that. They're a different team against the run. You throw in Burfict, the rookie backer, who's been terrific against the run, and you know, they're a lot stingier. Plus, they're getting you know, with Hall back there at corner and Newman, they're really getting elite corner play too. So they're you know, I think they're just a different team.
Yeah, on the Texans side, you know, there are a lot of differences in this team. It's a very similar team to what the Bengals saw, but, you know, the main difference that jumps out right off the bat is, of course, the quarterback. It's Matt Schaub this year playing quarterback instead of T.J. Yates, who was the rookie last year, the fifth-round draft pick from North Carolina, thrust into action as a third stringer, and, of course, he played the Bengals twice in the regular season where they clinched the division at Cincinnati in his second career start, and then in the playoff game here where he didn't do a lot, but he did enough to win, had that touchdown pass you mentioned to Andre Johnson. Now Matt Schaub getting a chance to make his first career playoff start, and he struggled a little bit, and we'll talk about the quarterbacks more in depth in a minute. He struggled a little bit lately, but been very solid overall this season. But on the defensive side of the ball for the Texans, you know, Mario Williams is out last year anyway. They didn't re-sign him. But you look at inside linebacker Brian Cushing being out for the year, and I think it's been maybe a little bit of an underrated loss nationally for this Texans team. He was the team MVP last year, as voted by his teammates. You know, he didn't have the gaudy sack numbers. He didn't have gaudy tackle numbers, but he did have 30 more tackles than any player on this team last season, and really an emotional leader, a physical leader of this defense on the inside. His pass rush on the inside freed up things for guys like Connor Barwin and Brooks Reed on the outside. He's been out since week five, and now they've lost Daryl Sharpton, another one of their inside linebackers for the season. Tim Dobbins, another inside linebacker, is banged up with an ankle injury, might not play. So they're really thin there at inside linebacker. But overall, it's by and large the same defense. Of course, J.J. Watt has taken just a monstrous leap forward in his second season. But overall, this defense went from second last year to now seventh this year in yards allowed, from fourth in points allowed to tied for ninth, and third in passing, the biggest difference. Less than 190 yards a game passing last year. This year, They're 16th, 225 passing yards a game. And then, of course, on the offensive line, we've got to mention they've been rotating guys at right tackle and right guard all season long. They let go of Eric Winston and Mike Brazel. They're starting right guard and right tackle before the season. It was a question mark heading into the season. It's still a bit of a work in progress. And they've gotten mixed results from, you know, their right tackles, Derek Newton and Ryan Harris, and then right guard, two rookies, Ben Jones and Brandon Brooks. Guys still finding their footing, but they've seen progress. So those are some of the big differences in the Texans as we approach this matchup. And now we're going to get into our third point that we're talking about here. Three players to watch on both sides, Jeff. And for the Texans, I'll just leave this one off. It's pretty simple. No surprise, these guys I'm about to name. And J.J. Watt, Arian Foster, and Andre Johnson. Obviously, marquee star players for the Texans, but they're going to be critical. You know, Gary Kubiak talks about how star players kind of raise their game come playoff time. Special players find a way to do that. And J.J. Watt, of course, did that last year. He gave a glimpse into what he was going to do this season. 3.5 sacks in 2 games. Of course, he had the highlight reel pick 6 against the Bengals that, you know, may be the most memorable play in this Texans short franchise history. And, you know, he really elevated his game in the playoffs and has continued that level of play through this season with his 20.5 sacks. And, you know, this defense has had its struggles, but if they are to find their way and get back to the Bulls on parade style of defense that they played for much of the beginning part of the year and last year, J.J. Watt's going to be at the forefront of that. Arian Foster, 285 rushing yards in the 2 playoff games last year. That's the most by any player in his first 2 playoff games in NFL history. And, of course, he had that 150-plus yard game against the Bengals, the 2 touchdowns, the 40-plus yard run he had tiptoeing down the sideline here. Whereas you mentioned, Jeff, he kind of had his way with Chris Crocker a little bit on that play, stiff-armed him near the sideline and kept going. And, you know, really had a remarkable 2 games there. You know, the second game against the Baltimore Ravens in the divisional round, one of the toughest defenses to run against, and he had another solid outing there. And then Andre Johnson, his long-awaited playoff debut, finally made it last year in his 9th season, and he had 200-plus yards in 2 games. He wasn't even back to 100% after missing all those games with a hamstring injury during the year. Now, it's obvious to anyone that's watched him play this year that he's definitely 100%. Had the best season of his career at the age of 31, 1,598 receiving yards, 112 catches. He's 31 years old, but playing like a 25-year-old Andre Johnson. So, you know, he's waited a long time for the team to have this kind of success, and he's fired up to have a chance to be 100% for the playoffs. It's going to be fun to see what he can do this time around, his second chance in the playoffs. He's not taking the opportunity lightly. But how about you, Jeff? 3 players for the Bengals to watch in this game.
Yeah, like you, it's pretty clear. It's A.J. Green, Andy Dalton, Geno Atkins. You know, A.J. Had a great start to the season. He had the third longest in-season streak, 9 consecutive games with a touchdown. He's only had one touchdown, I think, in the last 5 games. But he was terrific. Really, he's been terrific all year long. I mean, even though he didn't score against Pittsburgh, he and Andy hooked up for a big play to set up the winning field goal, and somehow he got 116 yards against that. We thought he had about, you know, watching the press box, seemed like he had about 70. But he had 116, and it was just huge. So he's a primetime player. I mean, in his first 20 games, he had numbers that Jerry Rice and the great ones haven't had. So they'd like to get him going because he's kind of been quiet in December. And Dalton, you know, Dalton hasn't Dalton has progressed in every statistical category. Hasn't had a great December, but he sure finds a way to win. He's one of these guys. He's kind of like a pitcher that goes out there and scatters 8 hits. Might not have his best stuff, but he finds a way to win. 11-5 on the road in his career. That's huge. Of course, if he wins in Houston, I don't know, does that count as a road game? Katy High School is pretty close. I don't know. But he's one of these wily guys that finds a way, you know. And like I said, he's to me the biggest thing is, you know, you can't say, well, he's thrown so many touchdowns, he's done this, he's done that. He's 11-5 on the road. He's gotten into the playoffs 2 consecutive years. First time that's ever happened in franchise history since 1980 and 1981 and 82. And when Ken Anderson did it, he was 33 years old, and he's done something that Boomer Esiason and Carson Palmer haven't done. And Geno, I think Geno might be the best, you know, player at his position. I mean, he's nobody's been able to block him since he came out of the 4th round here. I mean, Kevin Zeitler, the best. He's the rookie right guard for the Bengals that is going to be on J.J. Watt, and he's still wondering what hit him. When he came into the league, he was matched up with Geno. Geno's a freak, and he's very strong. He's 6'1", he's 300 pounds. He's really got the leverage game on you. 12.5 sacks. He makes you double team him, and it opens it up for his other, you know, for the other guys. Well, he, you know, I mean, it, as impactful as he is rushing the passer, what he does, what he makes lines do, it just opens it up for Dunlap and Johnson, the ends, and he just has this ability to absorb blockers, and he's one of these guys just goes 130 miles an hour. He's a lot like Watt, doesn't say much. Comes to it, he's a blue collar superstar. That's what Watt is, and that's what Geno is. Mm. And I think that's what those are the three guys.
Well, the fourth point I want to talk about is the quarterback play, and you mentioned Andy Dalton there. Can you just talk a little bit more about him? And the Texans obviously saw him last year. You know, defense coordinator Wade Phillips was asked about him yesterday here at his press conference in Reliance Stadium and said, you know, last year he was a rookie. Now he's not a rookie. He's not doing as many rookie things. Can you talk about his progression just a little bit more in his second season as a pro?
Yeah, he says he's got more say at the line of scrimmage now. They've got him more involved in the offense. He's making more decisions. I think he's got more at his fingertips offensively. Great anticipation. You know, that's his thing. Is anticipation. You know, he gets knocked for his arm strength, but you know, he kind of lives on anticipation and rhythm. But you know, he can quietly get the ball downfield. He hasn't done it lately, you know, and I think that's the one knock on him. Has probably been his deep ball accuracy, but the thing about him, Nick, is he's very confident, you know, and he'll take shots, he'll make a bad play, and he's got like the memory of a cornerback. He forgets, you know, and I think what Jay Gruden is looking for him to see is looking to see from him more is get out of pocket a little bit more, you know. Make a big maybe throw the ball. I mean, he's been very cautious. He's been very good. He's avoided big massive turnovers that blow games. But you know, he's also got to make plays too. And he's in that stage now where he's learning, you know, the difference between managing a game and winning a game. And I think we know now that, you know, in the playoffs you got to win games. And but you also can't blow them on the road too. You know, so it's a fine line. He's been walking it all year. But bottom line is he's when he's got to make the throw, he makes a throw. You know, when I go back to the game in Pittsburgh with 14 seconds left right after the interception by Reggie Nelson and against the number one ranked defense in the league, he looks down the barrel, makes a 21-yard throw to set up the field goal. And I think that kind of sums him up right now.
Well, on the other side, Matt Schaub, a guy who's coming under a lot of scrutiny among Texans fans and media for the way he's played over the last four games of the season. And, you know, this is, like I mentioned, his first career playoff start. And, you know, obviously the Texans, I think, are going to get a big bounce back game from him. We'll see how it plays out. But he talked all offseason, you know, when I would see him here at Alliance Stadium working with his teammates and doing film study when not many other guys were here. You know, I talked to him about how much that drove him, the thought of that he didn't get to play in the playoffs last year when a lot of people thought the Texans could have made the Super Bowl from the AFC had he been healthy for that playoff run. Of course, he missed the playoffs with a Liz Frank injury. He was out in Week 10 last season after a 7-3 start to the year, and T.J. Yates led him to the divisional round. But, you know, Matt Schaub was very driven by that. During the season, he even said, that drives me every day, the fact that he wanted to participate in the playoffs for the first time after being with his team since 2007. And, you know, you look at what he's done over the last four games, it hasn't been his best stretch of games. He's thrown one touchdown pass in that span, three interceptions. He's got a passer rating in the 70s. And but, you know, in his career, since he's been very good at home since 2011 with the Texans. He's 10-3 at Reliance Stadium, 18 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. And, you know, before Matt Schaub was coming under all this fire in the last four games, you know, he was playing some of the most efficient football of his career as far as getting rid of the ball, if he was under pressure, not taking sacks, not making critical mistakes and turning the ball over. He's gotten sacked 12 times in the last four games and four times in the season finale, three times in the two games before that. Very uncharacteristic for him. So if they can solve some protection issues, I think you'll see him play better. But a guy who's very motivated to play in this game, like I said, never started a playoff game before, and going to be very fired up for his first career playoff start. And we're going to get into our last point here again. I'd like to thank everyone for watching this Google Plus Hangout. I'm Nick Scherfield from HoustonTexans.com with my counterpart Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com. The Texans and Bengals play on Saturday at Reliance Stadium in the wild card round of the playoffs. And the last point, Jeff, that I wanted to go over with you was just three quick keys to the game. We've probably already discussed a lot of what we'll talk about in this one here, but I'll let you lead this one off. Three quick keys that you see on the Bengals side to this game on Saturday.
Well, the Bengals clearly have to stop the run because everything for the Texans is gauged off play action. I think they use play action six. They get the sixth most play action game in the league. Schaub is at his most effective. I think he's got 10 touchdowns, three picks off of play action. So they've got to make him getting shotgun and on third and long. I think the second key is going to be the Bengals special teams. They've played very well this year, and I think in a big game like this, it's going to be. I think we both think it's going to be a lot closer than 31-10. I think it's going to be a game of 21, and the special teams are going to be huge. They got Josh Brown, who's came off the bench and is the AFC, he came off the street to be AFC special teams player of the month. He's had some huge field goals down his stretch. They're getting a Pro Bowl type year from Kevin Huber, and they got a big time punt return man in Adam Jones, who didn't return punts last year because he was starting a corner. And since he's playing the nickel, he's going to get his shots in a punt return. And then I think the third thing is clearly the deep ball, the long passing game. The Bengals have to take the long ball out of mothballs. They got to take shots at that Texan secondary. My man Jonathan Joseph is a hell of a player, and we know that they're going to put him on A.J. Green, and so things are going to be tough for A.J. So Marvin Jones, the rookie, is going to have to. I think this game is going to be decided. We know J. Joe is going to be all over A.J., and he's going to need help this trip. He needs it from Gresham, the tight end, and he needs it from Marvin Jones. And I think those are probably the two big guys. We can talk about Green and Dalton all you want. The guy, they're going to come up and they're going to deliver. But the guys who are going to turn this game are going to be the specialist in Jones and Gresham. If they win or lose, that's going to decide it.
Well, you mentioned Jonathan Joseph. Of course, I should mention the former Cincinnati Bengal who started his career there. A huge acquisition for the Texans last year, and obviously another guy that's going to be very fired up. Had an interception in that game last year, played very well against A.J. Green. But my three keys on the Texans side, I'm going to start with the pressure on Andy Dalton and looking at the fact he's been sacked 19 times in the last four games, 46 times on the season. J.J. Watt said the best way to stop a great quarterback-receiver combo like Dalton and A.J. Green, which they're turning into one, the only way that J.J. Watt knows how to do that is to get to the quarterback. So that's what he's going to try and do. And obviously the Texans have been very susceptible to the deep ball lately. You look at that 70-yard back-breaking touchdown they gave up to T.Y. Hilton in the Colts game that really was what lost them that game, or ended up being the turning point in that game, sort of the nail in the coffin in Week 17. They've been giving up too many plays like that in recent weeks, and getting pressure on the quarterback going to be key to avoiding that because, no matter how well their guys are covering, and they've had issues covering as well, but no matter how well they're covering, if you try and make your DBs cover for 5 or 6 seconds, it's going to be a tough task, especially against some of the weapons that the Bengals have. On the other side, same thing, protecting Matt Schaub, against that front four that you talked about, Jeff, might be the best in the NFL, and the Texans have a lot of respect for what the Bengals have done up front. Gary Kubiak, a lot of the players have said it might be the toughest front four and front seven in general that they'll face all season. Geno Atkins, the 12.5 sacks. Michael Johnson, 11.5 sacks. On the interior, especially with Atkins, that's going to be a huge, huge challenge for Ben Jones, the rookie right guard, for Brandon Brooks, their other rookie right guard, Chris Myers, their center. He's a Pro Bowler, and so is our left guard, Wade Smith. But the fact of the matter is the Texans' offensive line, more of an undersized, athletic offensive line, and that's what they utilize, players like that, for their zone running scheme. But it's a challenge when you go against guys who are such a force in the middle like Geno Atkins. And then the third point, it could be a lot of different things for the Texans in this game, but I'm going to say it's something internally for them. It's penalties. They've got to reduce the penalties. They had 9 penalties for 60-plus yards against the Colts. They've had – an average of almost 9 penalties a game in their last 4 or 5 games. And for the first 10 weeks of the season, they're a very clean team as far as not committing penalties. But now it's been false starts. It's been special teams penalties. It's been, you know, pinning themselves back in first and long, second and long, third and impossibly long. So Gary Kubiak said he told the team it's been driving him crazy, all the penalties. A lot of guys said they just have to focus a little more. And if they can reduce some of the penalties, they won't put themselves in such tough situations unnecessarily. They'll give themselves a much better chance to win, because they've been doing that against playoff teams in the last 4 games of the season, and they ended up being 1-3, and that certainly did not help their cause there. So they've got to play cleaner against a very talented Bengals team, one of the hottest teams in the NFL, if they're going to have a chance to win on Saturday. And that's going to wrap it up for our Google Plus Hangout, our AFC Wildcard Playoff Hangout. Again, Jeff, I'd like to thank you very much for your time here. Hope everybody enjoyed it. We'll see you down here on Saturday at Reliance Stadium, Jeff.
Nick, thanks very much. We'll see you soon.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for watching.